Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
September 30th marks the 75th anniversary of the dedication of Hoover Dam. When it was finished in 1935, it was by far the largest dam in the world and considered one of the country's seven modern civil engineering wonders, celebrated in films like this 1950s-era documentary.
Build a dam in the wilderness, and the world will beat a path to it. For many centuries, this was a lonely canyon, unseen and untouched by man, scorched by a desert sun, scalded by an angry river slashing its way to the mother sea. Now it lies peaceful and silent, except for the gentle hum of a hydroelectric power plant, the bubbling up of water as it leaves mighty turbines, the cheerful sounds of America and the world on the move to see this pioneer multipurpose reclamation project, man built in Black Canyon.
Michael Hiltzik is a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the L.A. Times. His new book, Colossus, documents the history and importance of Hoover Dam. Michael Hiltzik spoke with Living on Earth's Jeff Young.
Now, the full title of your book is Colossus, Hoover Dam, and the Making of the American Century. Why that subtitle?
Well, my thesis, the theme of the book really is that this project made America. Hoover Dam provided the water and the power that really allowed the West to grow. And because the West grew to this extent, really the nation changed.
Tell me a bit about the dam and the Colorado River and what is so exceptional about both.
It's a beautiful structure. It's the epitome of machine age architecture from the 1930s. And it was a tremendous engineering achievement then. It still stands head and shoulders above much of the engineering that we have today. This dam was twice the size of any dam that had ever been built at the time. It required more concrete than had ever been poured in all the dams that the U.S. government had built up to that day. It had to be invented as it went up because existing construction methods and equipment weren't adequate to do the task. Even concrete had to be reformulated. New formulas had to be found because mass concrete had never undergone the stresses and strains that this dam was going to undergo. And this was all done at a time when the United States was under great stress, economic crisis, political uncertainty. And yet the country came together to build it, and it still serves us today.
Toward the beginning of your book, you have this quote that really stood out to me because it says so much about how people viewed the world back around the early years of the last century. And I'm wondering if you could read that for us. This is from Woodrow Wilson's Interior Secretary. Who was he?
His name was Franklin K. Lane. Just to put it in context, this was an era where the word conservation didn't mean what the way we think of it today. It meant putting natural resources to use for mankind. The way he put it was, every tree is a challenge to us, and every pool of water and every foot of soil. The mountains are our enemies. We must pierce them and make them serve. The sinful rivers, we must curb. And of course, the most sinful river of all was the Colorado.
The sinful rivers. Wow.
The sinful rivers.
Did they curb that sinful river, the Colorado?
Well, they achieved a lot in curbing it, but the river still is willful. Some would say it still is sinful. Certainly the people who lived downstream of the floods in the 1980s, they would consider it still very sinful. The peoples who lived in the basin long before Europeans got there used to think of the river as a dragon because it was so unpredictable and so violent, and it still has a way of flicking its tail at us even today.
And the big idea here is to put water to best use for us. But I was shocked to read in your book how much water we end up wasting simply because we create these impoundments and allow for evaporation.
That's right. There's a tremendous amount of evaporation, a tremendous amount of loss. Lake Mead, the reservoir of Hoover Dam, occupies the hottest part of the hottest region. It's the Nevada and Arizona desert. Engineers have measured that 20% of the river's production is probably lost to evaporation each year. On a single weekend, enough water evaporates to serve 17,000 households for a year.
And what becomes of the river after we've had our way with it, with the dams, with the impoundments, with the diversions, with the canals. What's left of the Colorado by the time it finally limps out to the sea?
The Colorado is probably the most heavily exploited river in North America, possibly in the world. There are six dams downstream from Hoover Dam now, and of course one major dam at least upstream, Glen Canyon Dam. And that water, every molecule gets used over and over and over again. And by the time the river reaches its delta, it's barely more than a trickle. This used to be a river that reached the delta with such violence that it could wreck boats in the Gulf of California with its tides. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. It's barely a trickle. And the quality of that water is heavily compromised by agricultural chemicals and salt and silt.
With climate change beginning to show its effects in the American West, what do you think is in store for Lake Mead and the other impoundments along the Colorado as the snow patterns and the snowpack in Colorado begins to change?
Well, that's a very good question. And we have a good sense of what's in store because it's been happening for at least 10 years and in some sense even longer. The snowpack, which feeds the Colorado and eventually feeds Lake Mead, has become very erratic. The droughts have gotten longer. There have been studies by the National Academy of Sciences and other experts who say there are going to be more periods of violent flooding on the Colorado and more periods of drought. Well, that's very hard to manage.
So much of what you write about resonates with us today. Conflicts about how we're going to generate our power, how we're going to distribute water in arid regions, whether big public works projects can get us out of an economic crisis. These could be today's headlines.
That's right. Well, they are today's headlines. We're going to be reading these headlines more and more as the years go on because this crisis is not going to go away. It's only going to get worse. And we need to be much smarter about how we use the resource. Now, Hoover Dam created a tremendous resource, a great economic boon to the region and to the nation. But it's a boon that really needs to be husbanded and treated with a great deal of respect.
Michael Hiltzik of the Los Angeles Times and author of Colossus, Hoover Dam, and the Making of the American Century. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
On the next Living on Earth, cartoon superhero Captain Planet turns 20, saving the Earth for a generation of kids.
Saving our planet is, yes, a good thing. However, we are but youths. How can we help?
Hey, love your accent, babe. You Russian?
Soviet.
Captain Planet lasted just 3 seasons, but his eco message outlived empires and TV ratings. Living on Earth and our sister program, Planet Harmony, asks 20-somethings how Captain Planet affected their lives. MyPlanetHarmony.com welcomes all and pays special attention to stories affecting minority communities. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our crew includes Bobby Bascom, Eileen Belinsky, Ingrid Lobet, Helen Palmer, Jessica Lee Smith, Ike Sriskandaraja, Mitra Taj, and Jeff Young, with help from Sarah Calkins, Annie Glosser, and Sammy Souza. Our interns are Nora Doyle Burr and Hannah Lyles. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Lirish-Dean composed our themes. Steve Kerwood is our executive producer. You can find us anytime at loe.org. And check out our Facebook page. It's PRI's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science. And Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners. The Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, the Oak Foundation, supporting coverage of climate change and marine issues. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve a chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And Pax World Mutual Funds, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. On the web at paxworld.com. Pax World, for tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.